Hey, everyone. Saltgrass Steakhouse is now open in Mishawaka. Wrangle up the crew and head down to Saltgrass Mishawaka for an unforgettable experience. Sink your teeth into mouth-watering, char-grilled, certified Angus beef steaks. Sip on ice-cold craft cocktails. And don't forget to try the famous Spicy Range Rattlers, all made daily in the Scratch Kitchen. Start making delicious memories at Saltgrass Mishawaka, 5126 North Main Street, across from Lazy Boy Furniture Galleries. Dine with us today.
Time for your March Madness fix.
Fox, baseline, up for the shot, dives off the glass. The game is over.
Gonzaga, the slipper still fits.
It's over. Michigan has won a national championship.
I got a feeling.
Holy mackerel! Holy mackerel!
Tonight's gonna be a good night.
The shot. Yes! The shot by Tate George wins it.
Williams could tie it with a three. He does!
Smart takes the shot.
Oh, Indiana wins the championship.
Oh, so now Valpo's going to have to go the length of the court.
All I need is a miracle.
It's to Jack. It's to Drew for the win.
Gone.
Oh, they did it.
Vice Drew did it. Valpo has won the game. A miracle.
One shining moment you knew.
Wittenberg. Oh, it's a long way.
There's the pass to Leitner. Puts it up.
Yes! Kamara gets it ahead. Cooper out in front of everybody. Gets it to Katie Douglas. Her shot is up. No good. And the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame have won the national championship.
And greetings, everyone. Welcome back to Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat. It's been a couple of days since we've been on the air. In fact, Wednesday was our last show because we had wall-to-wall coverage of the NCAA basketball tournament on Thursday and Friday. We had some craziness in the first round, but then a very chalky round of 32. And folks, we are setting ourselves up for some juicy matchups in the Sweet 16 Thursday and Friday. Here on WSBT Radio, we'll talk March Madness as the program progresses. But I think we all love the Cinderella story. It's fun for a while. But last year's Final Four, San Diego State, Florida Atlantic, I think we prefer to have those big names at the end. This year, we're going to have big boys in the Final Four because the ones and the twos all made it to the Sweet 16. I honestly don't know when the last time that's happened. I would have to imagine it's been a while. That's my gut feeling. But with really only one quote-unquote Cinderella, and I don't think we can really call them that truly, NC State, who won five games in 5 days to win a Power 5 conference title in the ACC. They're the only double-digit seed that made it to the Sweet 16. Otherwise, the heavy hitters are coming to weekend number two of the NCAA tournament. Again, I think we are going to have some of the best March Madness basketball we have seen in some time, with the quality of depth of great teams making it to the Sweet 16. Now, UConn is being UConn, and Purdue's looked like Purdue the last couple of games. So those two are the heavy hitters. They are still the favorites, but we've got a lot of good games in front of us, and we will talk about that and more coming up here on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on WSBT Radio. Today is a very unique day in South Bend, something that has not happened in quite some time, and that is the transition of power at the University of Notre Dame in the athletic director's chair, as Jack Swarbrick officially has been succeeded by a 1993 Notre Dame graduate, Pete Bavacqua. He has taken over as the director of athletics today. So after 16 years on the job, Jack Swarbrick steps aside, and Pete Bavacqua, a Notre Dame alum, takes over one of the most important seats in college athletics. So we wish Pete all the best moving forward as he takes over his position in a moment in time in which the Notre Dame football program is as healthy as it has been in a very, very long time. And we're saying that knowing they made the title game in 2012, a couple of trips to the college football playoff. But with the way things are lining up, the foundation that is being built right now around this program, not guaranteeing anything's going to be won in terms of a national championship this year, next year, but you really like the direction the program is headed, and it is building toward that possible moment in the future. And that's very, very exciting. Recruiting is going well. You've built a very strong roster going into this 2024 campaign. I think there are some things to be cleaned up around the Notre Dame football facilities, including the Goog eventually is going to have to be expanded or redone, just so there are some other ways to get some amenities within the program. And I'm sure that's going to be taken care of in the very near future. But you really love the direction of the football program. So Pete takes over in a time in which I don't want to say you go on cruise control, because you always want to strive to be better in everything you do. But he takes over in a spot where it's a nice transition because things are going in a positive direction right now, other than your possible starting quarterback needing a second surgery on his injured ankle. And, of course, we are talking about Riley Leonard. We will get into that discussion coming up over the next little bit. We've got March Madness talk to get to. We'll have a Hall of Fame basketball coach to hop on the program in about 17 minutes. The Hall of Fame coach of Bethel College, Mike Lightfoot's going to join me. We'll talk a little bit about Micah Shrewsbury's first year as head coach at Notre Dame. And what do you do if you are the opposition facing Purdue's 7-foot National Player of the Year 2 years in a row, Zach Edey? We'll get into those conversations and more with Coach Lightfoot in just a little bit here on Sports Radio 960 WSBT. Let's begin with a couple of opening topics here on WSBT Radio. And right off the bat, we focus on the Notre Dame football program and quarterback Riley Leonard. Saturday was practice number 4 for the Irish football team. They were in full gear. After practice, head coach Marcus Freeman revealed that Riley Leonard had right ankle surgery for a second consecutive time. The original surgery back in January, and now additional surgery took place on Friday. And apparently the surgery was necessary to attend to a developing stress fracture in that right ankle. So this is surgery number 2. You go back to January, I think there was a lot of, heated discussion between Notre Dame trainers and the media about the way things were covered at that time about the first surgery. Well, here we are now. He needs a second surgery, and he's had that second surgery basically to replace the plate in that right ankle because of the stress fracture that was developing. So I went online because I'm not a doctor. And so I looked up stress fractures in the ankle. And OrthoInfo said many stress fractures are overuse injuries. They occur over time when repetitive forces result in microscopic damage to the bone. The repetitive force that causes a stress fracture is not great enough to cause an acute fracture, such as a broken leg caused by a fall or a crash. Overuse stress fractures occur when an athletic movement is repeated so often that the weight-bearing bones and support muscles do not have enough time to heal between exercise sessions. There was thought in January, media were saying, some media were talking about maybe Leonard would not practice this spring due to the surgery. And of course, he was on his feet quickly after that surgery. And now here we are, and I think we are to the point where we can almost confidently say that we will not see him again this spring. If he comes back, it would be in the latter stages, because this feels like, from what we understand, a 4 to 6 to 8 week recovery. So now the guy coming to South Bend to hopefully be the starting quarterback, the biggest investment Notre Dame made in the transfer process, is on the shelf. He can do mental reps. He can go through film study. But a quarterback that needs more time to develop as a passer and needs more time to go repetitions more with the wide receivers, learning more about the offense from Mike Denbrock. It's all just going to be off the field. And that's disappointing. Is this the end of the world? Absolutely not. If this happened a couple of years ago, we wouldn't be sitting here in a spot where we would not be panicking. A couple of years ago, with the way Notre Dame recruited the quarterback position, there might be some panic. But here's the good news. Marcus Freeman has helped turn around quarterback recruiting. It started in Tommy Reese's last year here in South Bend, and it's carried over into Gino Gadduli. Notre Dame is handling the quarterback position extremely well in the recruiting process and using the transfer portal. Notre Dame, if we were talking about Buckner and Pine and this injury occurred, I'd be very concerned about the upcoming season. But you look at the depth in that quarterback room, starting with the guy who played extremely well in the Sun Bowl, Steve Angeli, and I get the sense from social media, you the Irish fans, there isn't a lot of panic about Leonard. And I think there's many reasons why, but one of them is I get the sense that there is a confidence in what this kid can do. It also opens the door for Kenny Minchie and CJ Carr to take a step up the ladder as Angeli works with the ones, Minchie goes from 3 to 2s, and Carr was working with, I would say, the bottom end of the offensive skill positions. Now he moves up a level and works with another level of players. Would I love to have Riley Leonard on the field? Absolutely. You have spring practice for a reason. You need repetitions. You need practice, especially a quarterback learning a new system. So it's not ideal, but this is a much better situation than what could have been the case pre-Marcus Freeman taking over as head coach based on the lousy quarterback recruiting that took place here at Notre Dame, pre-Marcus Freeman. Now you've got options, and that's a really good thing. So Marcus Freeman was asked about how he handles practice and is there a new timetable for naming a starting quarterback.
Right now, what we've done is just have Steve with the ones, Kenny with the twos, and CJ with the threes. And, you know, if we only go ones and twos with certain parts of practice, Kenny and CJ will rotate a little bit. And that's probably the plan going forward. Right now, we know, you know, Steve is ahead of the other guys, just through experience, just through the evidence that he's shown us. It's kind of made it simpler for Coach Gadduli to kind of script reps, ones, twos, and threes. You know, it's easy to do that. You know, listen, at some point we have to name a starting quarterback. And not having Riley for spring ball has kind of changed the process to being able to do that. But again, all I'm going to say is that at some point we got to name a starting quarterback. And when we feel like we're ready to do that, is it fall camp? Is it, you know, after spring ball? Is it, I don't know. You know, and what we got to do is we got to continue to look at the body of work, and you know, I love competition, and so the ability to have a quarterback competition is exciting to me because I think it makes everybody better. But I also understand, as Coach Denbrock and Coach Gadduli would say, is we need the continuity between a quarterback and the offensive line. So at some point we'll name one. I don't know when that time will be.
And obviously Riley Leonard and Steve Angeli are different styles of quarterbacks. Leonard's that guy that is so dangerous tucking the football away. With power and speed, he can hurt a defense with his running ability. Angeli has shown his ability to run an offense from the pocket. Again, not ideal, but look at the depth right now at the quarterback position. I would love Riley Leonard to continue to work with the new wide receivers, and from his standpoint, they're all new wide receivers. You'd like to continue building that chemistry, but that's going to be put on hold as that stress fracture developing in his ankle, leading to another surgery. But I think most of you kind of feel the way I do. Riley Leonard is not a given to be a dominant quarterback. I think we all feel like with Mike Denbrock in charge, he can help continue to develop his passing skills as he tries to become a more complete quarterback, and that's exciting. But it's not a guarantee. Steve Angeli, Kenny Minchie, CJ Carr, here's your opportunity to take advantage of a tough break, dare I say, to Riley Leonard, as he'll be on the sideline for a little bit of time. Here's a little bit more from Marcus Freeman talking about all his quarterbacks.
Every day you evaluate and say, hey, is there a way to put some pressure on all of them? I don't want anybody getting comfortable. Steve, you know, I don't want Steve to go here. I'm the one, and I'm not worried about Kenny and CJ. He shouldn't be worried about him. He should be worried about Steve. But at the same point, I don't want him comfortable. You don't want anybody comfortable in the position they're in. You want that competition, that adversity to really get those guys to thrive. So, no, this is just for today, you know, and I'm sure it'll probably be for the next practice. But if there's ways to create competition, we would definitely do it.
Marcus Freeman on his quarterback situation with Riley Leonard right now on the sideline for this Fighting Irish football team. So we press on. No one's going to feel sorry for the Irish. And let's make the best of this situation. Mike Denbrock now has the opportunity to work with these other three quarterbacks with Riley Leonard currently on the sideline. All right, 5:23 at Sports Radio 960 WSBT. Within the hour, the Notre Dame women's basketball team advanced to the Sweet 16 of the NCAA tournament. The Fighting Irish, a 2-seed, took care of the 7-seed Ole Miss, 71-56. From what I understand, Notre Dame's zone was very effective against an Ole Miss team that had some good pieces in the interior on offense. But Notre Dame shot the ball extremely well, 50% from the field, and they got 20 points from Maddie Westfeld. The freshman Hannah Hidalgo picked up 19 points, and Sonia Citron had a double-double with 17 points and 10 rebounds. So the Fighting Irish move on to the Sweet 16, where they will take on the 2-seed Oregon State. Oregon State has moved on to the Sweet 16, and also you've got the number one seed and just the rocket ship, South Carolina. They've also advanced to the Sweet 16. So the Fighting Irish are right now in the regional semifinals in Albany, and all of the top teams are there as well. Oregon State, Notre Dame, 2-3 seed later this week. They have not announced a start time. Couple of thoughts from the post-game press conference from Notre Dame basketball coach Neil Ivey.
Well, this one is really, really special. Obviously, going to the Sweet 16 with this group, this is a special group. So all glory to God, number one. I mean, we've been through a lot. We've been through a lot this season. We've had a lot of highs and lows, a lot of adversity. And to see this group just find a way to come together, to persevere through all of our adversity is something special. I'm so grateful to be a part of this. So thankful for the fans. I'm so thankful. It's 2:00, I know. And we still had an amazing crowd. The last 6 weeks have just been magical with this group. The way that we're coming together, being able to accomplish, going back to the third consecutive Sweet 16, which is not easy, is just phenomenal. So I'm so grateful, so blessed. And again, the big three, they really showed out today. We had Maddie Westbow led us with 20 points, Hannah with 19, 7 for 9 in the free throw line, and Sonia double-double, 17 rebounds in the last game, 29 points with a career high. Credit to everybody on the team. Our zone was fantastic. Nat played with such poise. Her presence was amazing. KK, AD, everyone contributed. Everyone got in the game, and it was just awesome. You know, I'm just so grateful, like I said. Thank you, Irish fans. Thank you, South Bend, for really showing up for us and showing up for women's basketball. Excited to dance, excited to go to Albany, and again, super grateful.
All right, that was Neil Ivey just a few moments ago at the podium at Purcell Pavilion following Notre Dame's 71-56 victory over Ole Miss. They'll take on the 3-seed Oregon State in the Sweet 16 in Albany, New York, later this week. Having been to that arena, if it is the same arena that the NCAA hockey tournament was at, it's not a very impressive facility, to be quite honest with you. I'm assuming it's the same one. I'll have to check into that. But for the regional semifinals to be there, I find that a little disappointing considering some of the great arenas we have in the United States. All right, 5:27 is our time. Darren Pritchett with you. We'll take a timeout. We're going to talk some March Madness with former Bethel College head coach, Hall of Fame coach Mike Lightfoot. We'll talk some Boilermaker basketball, Notre Dame's end of their season, the progress they made, and more coming up in a couple of moments as Budweiser's weekday sports beat rolls on for this Monday on Sports Radio 960 WSBT.
Budweiser's weekday sports beat on Sports Radio 960 WSBT.
Wesley, off balance shot, no good. Atkinson put back, it's good. That's it. Happy St. Patrick's Day. Notre Dame in double overtime.
Here's your host, Darren Pritchett.
Happy St. Patrick's Day, baby.
Well, that's from a couple of years ago in Dayton, that classic double overtime victory for the Fighting Irish under then head coach Mike Bray. Mike Shrewsbury just completed his first season as head coach of the Fighting Irish, and they came a long way from the team we saw in December. I'm Darren Pritchett. Sports Beat continues at 5:32 here on WSBT Radio, and I'm thrilled to have back on the program Hall of Fame retired coach Mike Lightfoot, who spent so many years winning championships at Bethel College. And now I follow him on social media. He's going from state to state, busy as ever, talking about the great game of basketball. And I'm thrilled to have him on the program to talk a little March Madness here on WSBT Radio. Coach Lightfoot, how are you? I would imagine great. This is your time of the year.
This is March Madness, March Sadness, and everything in between. Because, you know, I as of today, I think we have 62 coaching staffs that have been released, you know, so that's always a tough time that many people don't realize. Maybe your listeners don't realize when a head coach gets released, the staff gets released. And so, you know, that might be four or five staff members that are, and many of them are very young. They have young families, and now they have to totally relocate, and who knows where, because a lot of them are right now just kind of wondering where they're going to end up or if they're going to find a job. So that's why I say it's March Madness and March Sadness, because a little bit of both goes on. But yeah, what some incredible games we just saw this week.
Well, you talk about coaching changes. Your son Ryan has moved on to Coastal Carolina as he is now an associate head coach after a really good season at Western Carolina. He takes a jump up the coaching chain, Coach, and I think you and your family have to be so excited what's in front of him at Coastal Carolina, a place I'd like to be recruited to. I mean, Myrtle Beach, sign me up, Coach. I'm ready to go.
Yeah, we're always excited. You know, he was at Grand Canyon, and then he was up in the Smoky Mountains, and now Coastal Carolina. These are great places not only to recruit but also go visit him. So him and his wife, we're excited about that opportunity that you know, they're in the portal recruiting like crazy right now. I know he was in four states over the weekend just trying to, you know, put together a team and work with that. But, yeah, we're really excited. He could be somewhere in North Dakota, and so we're happy that he's in Myrtle Beach.
Coach, I know there were times that you would have had the opportunity to leave Bethel College for maybe even a Division I job. And back then, I don't mean like it was 20 years ago, but there was no NIL, there was no transfer portal. Can you imagine, Coach, now as a head coach, thinking about being a D1 coach and all the things you have to deal with nowadays? In fact, I think that's probably a big reason why some big-name coaches have given up the coaching whistle earlier than we all expected.
Yes, it's really changed the game tremendously, and I don't even know if people can even comprehend the wild, wild west of Division I basketball and football, because, you know, kids can leave and put their name in the portal. You know what, there's 1,300 kids already in the portal, and they're just scrambling around looking for a job if they don't like where they're at, or they see another opportunity with more NIL money, they're going to go. So you no longer can develop a relationship with someone over 3, 4, or 5 years like coaches have done in the past. That's just not happening. You can work with a great kid that's in the mid-major and develop them and get him ready, and then, you know, next year he's going to be gone to some Power 5 school. And that's just the way it is. And now also with the portal, a lot of people don't realize that high school kids aren't being recruited to D1 schools as much, because coaches are saying, wait a minute, if I'm going to recruit somebody, why not get somebody that's 22 years old that has played for 2 or 3 years rather than, you know, find a young high school player, and if he comes really good, he won't keep him anyway. So it's becoming really a carousel of stuff going on in D1 basketball.
Hall of Fame coach Mike Lightfoot, my guest on WSBT Radio. You called some early season Notre Dame basketball games. The Irish, I think we all remember losing at home by 20 points to the Citadel in the post game. Head coach Micah Shrewsbury was very hard on his team and talked about helping people go to the transfer portal if they were not going to show more effort. Hey, Mike Bray would always say, I love my guys. Micah does it a little differently. There's no right or wrong way to handle the media. Micah used the media, I think, to get a message across to his team. How much progress do you believe Micah made with this program from where they were in December to ending the year with, I think, what many people would say, surprisingly, 7 ACC conference wins?
Night and day. You know, we saw them early against Citadel, and Ryan's team from Western Carolina came up and also beat the Irish. And, you know, it was a process. And he told people that, you know, stay with us, hang in there with us. Micah kept saying, you know, this team's going to get better. They're going to get tougher. And as you could see throughout the year, the offensive end of the floor started to improve while the defensive end continued to get better. And he really set the standards of, we're going to work hard. We're going to be a lunch pail type of a team, blue collar mentality. And the players have bought in. So credit to Micah and his staff. They worked extremely hard behind the scenes, on film, watching, trying to get the most out of the players that they could. And I think they maximized pretty much everything they could get out of this year's team. So, you know, hat off to Coach Micah Shrewsbury. He's done an amazing job, and good things are going to happen for the Irish in the future.
As a media member and as a fan, I think Marcus Burton was much better than I even anticipated. You're a coach. You understand how the game is played. Was he just the way you thought he would be? Did he even exceed your expectations?
He exceeded my expectations. And when I see him before practice or after practice, that's the thing that just sticks with me. Marcus, he has done an amazing job of developing his game. I just didn't see the mental toughness that he has inside of him. Even at Penn High School, I saw him as a great scorer of the game. I didn't know how he's going to be able to defend, especially with his size. Yeah. But inside that young man is a tiger that hates to lose, loves to compete, and he has got a special gift of body control and being able to get to the rim or step back and knock in a three. And you could just see, as he developed his game along the season, so did the Irish.
Coach, as you sit from the outside looking into this program and knowing Micah Shrewsbury is right now hunting in the transfer portal, is there a type of player or players that could be added to this roster that would enhance what Marcus Burton started this year with this offense? I mean, a lot was on his shoulders throughout this campaign.
Well, I think his son really helped
yes.
in that process. I think that we saw him emerge as a prolific three-point shooter. That took the pressure off Burton a lot. And you can see the confidence that he developed as the season went along. I think that they're going to need some help in the big with the bigs. They need to continue to recruit and find a couple frontline players that are going to help this young freshman core continue to develop. So I would say that they're looking in that portal to find the right kind of kid that's going to be mentally tough, but it's going to be able to help them on the glass and be another person that they can have in that five-man rotation that's going to be a big five-man. So I think that's probably something that the staff is looking for, to find that right person that can come in and help the Irish. But they do have a great, great crew of young players that are going to continue to get better.
Hall of Fame basketball coach Mike Lightfoot joining me here on WSBT Radio. Let's go to West Lafayette for a moment. The Purdue Boilermakers got through the first weekend. They're in the Sweet 16. They dominated what was a really good Utah State team. They made them look like just a team that barely got into the tournament. They're actually really, really good, and Purdue dominated them. And it's been interesting the last couple of years, Coach. I think teams have tried everything to at least try to slow down the seven-footer Zach Edey. You see double and triple teams. Another example, when Purdue went to Illinois, Brad Underwood in the first half just let Edey go one-on-one against Coleman Hawkins, and he put up 20 points in the first half, but he wanted to take away the other parts because Purdue's number two in the country in three-point shooting behind Kentucky. So it's almost you take one thing away, something else is going to hurt you with this Purdue team. If you're Mark Few and Gonzaga, how in the world do you try to at least slow down Zach Edey and this Boilermaker offense that looks so good over the weekend?
I think there is a way. I don't know if it can be done, but I think the best way to stop Edey is Edey stop himself by getting in foul trouble.
Mm.
And I think there's got to be a focus on that as we get to the Sweet 16. If I was Coach Mark Few, I would say, hey, let's go to the rim. Not just the big, anybody. Get to the rim and force Zach Edey to come over and block it, which he does a lot, but I would continue to attack that rim. And that's the only way I think you can defeat him, is have him sitting on the bench in foul trouble. And Purdue's not the same team. They continue to play well, but they're not the same defensive team without Big Zach Edey in there as a rim protector. They have some deficiencies on the perimeter defensively against quick guards. So if you could get him in foul trouble, now you have a good chance of upsetting Purdue.
I've thought all year, Coach, they're a different team from last year from two standpoints. Number one, Braden Smith has become a more all-around point guard. And number two, adding the kid from SIU Carbondale, Lance Jones. I think he's added a little grit to this team besides his great outside shooting and really good defense. They just feel like a different team this year. Do you agree?
Yeah, they are. You know, if you go back and look at them last year, and those freshman guards, both of them, really struggled turning the ball over quite a bit. I think they were typically freshmen that just wore out mentally and physically as the season went along. And I think once they got to the Big Ten tournament championship, once that happened, then they really didn't have much in the tank. This year, they are a much better team. They have more depth. They're athletic. They've improved in a lot of areas in that area. But, you know, the best thing about a freshman is he becomes a sophomore, and that's exactly what's happened with Purdue's backcourt.
Coach, I'm just curious, from someone who spent so many years on the sideline dealing with game management, game in and game out as a head coach, Matt Painter has allowed an assistant coach to call all the offensive plays. You see the assistant coach, he's up on the sideline with a dry erase board calling the plays, and Matt is letting him take care of the offense, which is a big take on when you consider all the different ways that teams are trying to defend Zach Edey, and you have to have answers for those defenses. Matt wants to focus more on game management. How hard is it as a head coach, knowing you have such an awesome team, to let go of the reins and let someone take care of that, and Matt's now focused more on handling game management, game in and game out?
You know, when I go down to practices at Purdue, and I'll say to PJ, I say, now, how does he communicate? How does Matt Painter communicate what he wants done? And then you put it on that little whiteboard. And he said, he doesn't. I said, well, wait a minute. Who tells him what plays that you need to run? He goes, he doesn't. And Sasha also, just his first year, said, hey, Coach, and he turned to me and said, Coach, I call all the out-of-bounds plays. I said, you do? And that's exactly Matt Painter delegates. And, you know, it's amazing to me. I mean, I think it's absolutely amazing that he turns over that and complete offense. Now, I will say this. They talk and communicate a lot in the film room, preparing for what sets Purdue for every – game they play. They pick 20 of their sets that they feel are best suited for their opponent they play. And so they will go over those 20 sets. Maybe I'm telling a secret. I better be careful. But they pick 20 sets that they feel that will work really well against the opponent they have. And so they work together as a staff to make sure that everybody knows exactly what sets they feel are best suited for the team that they play. So one team, they may not have the same set. They might have different wrinkles. So that's pretty amazing, though, Darren, when you see a delegation of such an important part of an offense. He almost runs it like a football program, yeah, where you have a defensive coordinator, offensive coordinator. And I'm seeing more and more of that in college basketball, where you're trying to find one guy that's going to focus in on the defense, one guy focuses on the offense, one guy focused on the bigs, one guy focused on the guards, and then the head coach manages the whole game.
Wow. I'm fairly confident Mark Few is not going to be listening to the podcast of this particular show. So I think we're safe, at least for the game coming up on Friday.
I think Mark's probably got other things to to think about in the next few days. But I just find that fascinating, yeah, as I go and watch everybody practice when they just delegate and just pick 20 sets that they're going to run. And that takes a special kid.
Yeah.
And when they ask why Purdue recruits certain kids, they have to have an extremely high basketball IQ. And because of that, they can run a lot of different wrinkles and sets that keep their opponents off balance.
Coach, I think for many years, once the three-point shot came to the college game, it allowed the little guy to have a chance against the big guy in the NCAA tournament. The three-point shot neutralized the game. If you had a little school that got hot from the three-point line, like Oakland, they can knock off a Kentucky. But I'm looking at what happened Saturday and Sunday. 15 of the 16 favorites won their games. And now we have what I believe is going to be an electric Sweet 16, because you have all the big boys in. All the ones and twos made it. There's only one double-digit seed. I think we love Cinderella, but only so much. I thought the Final Four lacked a little pizzazz last year when you had some of the quote-unquote smaller guys making the Final Four. I'm wondering, with NIL, with the transfer portal, is that going to take away, in your opinion, some of the Cinderella stories? Is what we saw this weekend, do you feel like that could become more of the norm?
Yes, it is going to be a norm, because all the power schools now can, on graduation, when they lose a great player, they can replace him with an older veteran from somewhere in the portal. And so, Darren, you hit it right on the nail. That's exactly what's happening. You just strengthen your team by adding just another guy after graduation. So it's not like we got to bring in young people and regroup and rebuild. It's just reload. And most of those people are taken from where? The mid-majors. So those mid-majors no longer have those standout players. You know, there's going to be one or two of those happen every year because there's just so many great kids out there. But now when you get into the Sweet 16, you see it's really narrowed down, and these teams have got a lot of a lot of talent that's going to be really interesting here next weekend.
One final question for you, Coach. Just a quick thought. Grace, I believe, aren't they in the Final Four in the NAIA basketball tournament? And they play in just a little bit?
Yes, they do. And they, for those that have not been able to see Grace, they're one of the best NAIA schools in the country. I think it'll take someone's pretty special in this Final Four to beat them. They're big, they're strong, athletic. They have a lot of local talent, and hats off to Coach Moore and the Grace Lancers, because they could be bringing home another banner here in Northern Indiana at the NAIA level.
How about that? Good luck to them as they take on Freed Hardeman, a school that I've never heard of. But they're going down tonight, Coach. Grace is going to take care of them. We're pulling for Grace to get it done tonight. And, Coach, always a pleasure to talk to you. Always appreciate your knowledge and information. And hopefully we can catch up again sometime very, very soon. A fun time of the year, no doubt about it, with high school, college. Can't get any better than this.
Yeah, I'll be looking forward to heading down to the Final Four and in Phoenix and giving it all. We can talk about the Final Four when we get settled down there.
Sounds like a plan, Coach. Thank you so much for your time. We'll talk to you again very soon.
Okay, Darren.
Thank you so much. Hall of Fame coach from Bethel College, Mike Lightfoot, joining me on WSBT Radio. And that was fascinating, hearing some insight on that Boilermaker coaching staff and what they like to do, the delegation. As he was describing how Matt Painter hands out assignments, it did sound like a football team. When you have an offensive coordinator, a defensive coordinator, a quarterback coach, they kind of have an offensive coordinator, and they have someone to call the inbound plays. That's really, really interesting. And to hear Coach Lightfoot say that's becoming more the norm, that's something that I think we as fans maybe don't get a chance to go behind the curtain that much to see that. So really interesting tidbits there from the Hall of Famer, Mike Lightfoot. It's 5:52. We'll have more Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat coming up in a moment on your home of the Fighting Irish, Sports Radio 960 WSBT.
This is the Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat Twitter question of the day from Sports Radio 960 WSBT.
5:56 at WSBT. Darren Pritchett with you. Well, we go back to the last time we were on the air, which was Wednesday, before the first round of the NCAA tournament got started on Thursday. I asked you this question on Twitter X, my account, at 960SportsBeat. Who wins the NCAA men's basketball tournament? Now, I offered you two choices. Choice number one, two of the favorites, the defending national champion, UConn Huskies, and the Purdue Boilermakers. Choice number two, you get the rest of the field. UConn has been dominant throughout the season. You can say the same thing about Purdue. The Boilermakers ended up only being the third overall seed, which I have a hard time believing based on the teams they beat during the regular season. Awfully hard to imagine. At worst, they should be number two. I can understand UConn being number one. They have looked like the best team throughout the year. So you get two of the favorites. Is that the direction you went, or do you take the rest of the field? Well, the voting showed 68% believed the best route to picking the national champion was by taking the rest of the field. 32% believes the national champion will come from UConn or Purdue. Based on what we saw in the first two rounds, I think it is fair to say the two most impressive teams were UConn and Purdue. Add into the fact that Cinderella has been squashed in the round of 32. Like I said to start the show, I just can't call NC State a Cinderella. They're an 11 seed, but they ran the table 5 wins in 5 days to take home the ACC title in DC, and they're a major program. They don't fall into the category of a Cinderella, so we really don't have one in the Sweet 16. So the rest of the field still has some pretty good heavy hitters, including two other number one seeds, North Carolina and Houston. And you still have some really good twos. For example, Arizona with Caleb Love. Iowa State with their number one defense in the country. And you look at the three line in the same regional with UConn and Iowa State is Illinois, the Big Ten champions, who are now the number one offensive team in the country. It'll be one versus one, offense, defense, Illinois and Iowa State. That's why I really think with the Cinderellas out of the mix, we are going to have some awesome basketball this weekend. The only reason it may not be awesome is UConn drilling San Diego State in the Sweet 16 and Purdue getting by Gonzaga. Gonzaga's kind of now a trendy pick because they look so good against Kansas to be a threat to Purdue. I just don't see it. I don't think it's a good matchup for Gonzaga. Granted, there aren't really that many teams that match up well against Purdue. UConn is one of them. And we might see that matchup in the national championship game. But the one thing that could derail Purdue is what I talked to Coach Lightfoot about a couple of moments ago. That team that gets hot from the three-point line, and Purdue will face possibly two high-end shooting teams in Gonzaga and Tennessee in the next two rounds. Tennessee was ice cold from three in one of their first two games of the tournament. They can light it up as good as anybody. So that maybe is the scariest part for Purdue. They've got a couple of teams shooting well. Gonzaga coming off a great shooting game against Kansas. Tennessee is pretty consistently a really good offensive team. So again, who wins the NCAA basketball tournament? You voted at my Twitter X account at 960SportsBeat. 68% rest of the field. 32% believes the champion comes from either UConn or Purdue. We thank you for voting in our Twitter X question of the day. Now to our brand new one on this Monday. And we go back to Notre Dame football. Here is today's question. What best describes your feelings after hearing Notre Dame quarterback Riley Leonard had to have a second surgery on his injured right ankle? I'm giving you three choices to describe your emotions. Number one, a little freaked out. Number two, concerned. Or number three, not worried at all. Maybe you're not worried because game number one is a long way away. Maybe another reason is you're a big Steve Angeli fan. Whatever the case may be, not worried is option number three. I would love for you to vote. Leave a message on my Twitter X account at 960SportsBeat. What best describes your feelings after hearing Notre Dame quarterback Riley Leonard had to have a second surgery on his injured right ankle? Freaked out, concerned, not worried. Results coming up on tomorrow's program. It is 6:03. I'm Darren Pritchett. We'll take a timeout. A sports update is on the way, including the results of the Notre Dame-Ole Miss women's basketball game at Purcell Pavilion as the winner goes to the Sweet 16. Answers to those questions and more coming up in a moment here on your home of the Fighting Irish, Sports Radio 960, WSBT South Bend.
You can listen to Budweiser's weekday sports beat live or on demand with our free WSBT radio app. Just search WSBT radio in the App Store and Google Play. Now, back to local sports talk on Sports Beat with your host, Darren Pritchett.
14 minutes after 6 o'clock, Budweiser's weekday sports beat brought to you by Budweiser. The King of Beers, locally distributed by United Beverage Company of South Bend. Sports fans, this Bud's for you. By Barnaby's of Mishawaka and Granger. Now with three locations serving Michiana's most favorite pizza since 1978. Bethel University's Adult and Graduate Studies. Visit BethelUniversity.edu/solidground for details. First State Bank, committed to being a premier financial partner. First State Bank demonstrates and delivers hometown values. By Midland Engineering Company, beginning their second century of quality roofing experience. And by Bethel University Athletics. Sign-ups for youth summer sports camps are underway. Visit bupilots.com for details. Well, we had some Notre Dame football news late last week while we were not on the air due to coverage of March Madness here on WSBT Radio. Not the news we were looking for from Fighting Irish head coach Marcus Freeman.
Riley Leonard will be out the next few weeks, you know, due to an additional surgery he had on his ankle on Friday, so yesterday, to address a stress fracture that was beginning to develop. And, you know, basically the surgery was to exchange the current plate he had in his ankle with a new one. You know, and we the doctors thought it went extremely well. The overall prognosis of his and health of his ankle is excellent. So we'll see when he can get back. We're not putting a timetable, but we know it's going to be a few weeks, but we're not saying he's out for the spring. You know, there could be a chance he comes back and participates in some capacity during spring ball.
Well, again, many stress fractures are overuse injuries. He had the initial surgery in June. They've taken that plate out, put a new one in, and hopefully a speedy recovery for Riley Leonard. But I think we should all have the expectation that Riley Leonard will not participate on the field in spring practice. He's probably going to be there, but if he gets into the tail end of spring practice, I guess it's a win, but I think our expectation should be don't expect to see him. If we do, terrific. But I think the good news is Notre Dame is set up to succeed at the quarterback position, despite the fact the expected star, Riley Leonard, is not going to be able to take reps with the team in the spring. You've got Steve Angeli. We saw what he could do in limited opportunities during the regular season last year, and then an opportunity to shine against Oregon State and the Sun Bowl. He played extremely well, good enough to be the MVP that went to wide receiver Jordan Faison. And I think with the youthfulness and the upside of the other quarterbacks right now in that quarterback room, Kenny Minchie and C.J. Carr, that's why I don't think there's any reason to panic. They have a quarterback room that was designed if the starter or the starter we anticipate being Riley Leonard, if he goes down with an injury, you've got guys waiting in the wings that can win you football games. You beat Texas A&M in that opener. On paper, there is a gap between A&M and Florida State in which you are probably going to be a heavy favorite in those games. So if you have to use a backup quarterback early on in the season, hypothetically, worst case scenario, Riley's ankle continues to be a problem, don't you feel good as a fan what you have waiting in the wings at this particular time? And Steve Angeli is going to be working with the ones throughout the rest of spring practice, a big opportunity. And I know it's always the social media message board conversation, well, which quarterback is going to transfer? Which one at the end of spring practice is going to say, you know what, I need to go somewhere else to get my chance? C.J. Carr is not going anywhere, the freshman. He loves this place. He was here for bowl practice. He's part of the future of the quarterback position. Riley Leonard got a very nice NIL check. He's not going anywhere. I think a lot of people assumed it's either going to be Steve Angeli or Kenny Minchie. If someone's going to leave after spring practice, it'll be one of those two. And you know what? It still could happen. But it's awfully hard for Steve Angeli to walk away, even if there's another place that needs a starting quarterback, because based on injuries, based on his play, he's got a great opportunity to be a major factor at the quarterback position here. We probably know the least about Kenny Minchie. There's all the excitement about Carr. We've seen Angeli now. We've watched from afar Riley Leonard. Minchie's kind of that guy, well, I'd kind of like to learn more about him, and we probably will in the Blue Gold game April 20th, which you can hear live here on Sports Radio 960 WSBT. So I guess Minchie still is that guy that you got to be worried about going to the portal eventually. I'm not worried about that at this time because, again, he's getting a major opportunity being the quote-unquote number two guy with Riley Leonard on the sideline. Again, this team is built to withstand an injury like this. 2-3 years ago, I'd be very concerned based on quarterback recruiting pre-Marcus Freeman. But since Marcus Freeman has grabbed that big chair, he's helped sort out quarterback recruiting, and now you've added Minchie, you've added Carr, you've got Deuce Knight ready to sign in December. You brought in Sam Hartman, you brought in Riley Leonard. The quarterback issues of bringing in the right guy look to be a thing of the past, and that's why this is not a doomsday situation with Leonard on the sideline. You'd love to have him on the field in spring. You have spring practice to get better. He's not going to get better on the field, but he'll have film time. He'll have communication with the players. Just won't be able to show it out on the football field. But I feel good about that quarterback room being run by Gina Gadulli and, of course, offensive coordinator Mike Denbrock. And that's another reason why there's no panic in me right now, because you've got a veteran offensive coordinator to sort this situation out. If you had a young coordinator, aka a second-year offensive coordinator, I would be biting my fingernails. But full belief in Mike handling this situation. He's been there, he's done that, and he's got some pretty good individuals to work with. 621 at Sports Radio 960 WSBT. Darren Pritchard with you on this Monday, March the 25th of 2024. Let's go to our top five storylines of the weekend.
One question, five answers. This is the My Five Questions of the Day on Sports Radio 960 WSBT.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is number five.
We begin our look at some of the top headlines of the weekend by having a little fun. Yale, one of the fun stories of the round of 64, they took down the four seed Auburn to get to the round of 32, where they lost to San Diego State. But Yale got a lot of great exposure to the basketball world. In fact, with social media, there's a lot of programs that become kind of darlings because of the way they handle Twitter X or Instagram, social media. Well, the Yale MBB Twitter X account blew up after Yale knocked off Bruce Pearl and the Auburn Tigers. They were flooded with tweets after that round one victory. The problem is, at Yale MBB, which seem like Yale men's basketball, but it's not. Dick Vitale, the legendary ESPN broadcaster, he even used at Yale MBB in one of his tweets celebrating the Bulldogs' victory over Auburn. So despite the handle, Yale MBB is not Yale men's basketball. The account is actually the Yale Molecular Biophysics and Biochemistry Group, Yale MBB. We sorted it out correctly. You can go to Yale M Basketball to respond back to the Bulldog basketball team. But one of the media darlings of the first round was the Yale Molecular Biophysics and Biochemistry, getting all these congratulations from people across the country, including ESPN's Dick Vitale.
Four!
Number four storyline from the weekend, the NCAA tournament went from early upsets to chalky. As we've discussed on the program so far, all the number one seeds and all the number two seeds made the Sweet 16. There's only one double-digit seed remaining, and that is the ACC champion, North Carolina State Wolfpack, who are an 11 seed. NC State had a nice second round game. All they had to do was beat the 14 seed Oakland, who had one of the stunners, beating third-seeded Kentucky. But in round one, we had 12 underdogs find the winner's circle, the most since 2001, and tied for the second most since 1985. So the dogs were barking in the round of 64 Thursday and Friday. But everything changed over the weekend in the round of 32. Vegas favorites went 15-1 in the second round. The only team that got the job done as an underdog, the Clemson Tigers, a 6 seed, knocking off the 3 seed, the Baylor Bears. And they had Baylor down double digits late in the game. The Bears put together a late surge, down 2. Late in the contest, missed a couple of free throws, and that was pretty much it for the Big 12 Baylor Bears. So the favorites went 15-1 over the weekend, which has set up all the big boys coming to the table trying to get to the Elite Eight.
Number 3.
Our number 3 storyline from the weekend. The Big Ten's best 2 teams were the only 2 that survived from the conference to get to the second weekend of the NCAA tournament. I guess I'm not understanding all of the panic and chaos from Purdue fans leading into the first 2 rounds. I know you lost to FDU last year, but this team's totally different. If you're a fan, you see it. And the matchups weren't the same. FDU had a very small athletic team that had the formula to kind of get into the Boilermakers' heads and made Zach Edey not that dominant player. That wasn't going to happen this time around. Utah State's really good, and Purdue made them look like a JV team yesterday to get to the Sweet 16. 106-67. Are you serious? Wow. That's getting rid of all those demons from last year. Zach Edey only played 27 minutes against Utah State. 23 points, 14 rebounds. And what you really have to like as a Boilermaker fan, the other physical guy inside, Trey Kaufman Wren, he had 18. He got off to a fast start, putting points on the board for the Boilermakers. Fletcher Lawyer had a stretch where he didn't shoot it well. Back on track, he had 15. And then Braden Smith had one of those stat-stuffing performances. Only 5 points, but 8 assists and 4 rebounds. Here's the problem for Boilermaker opponents. You've got a unicorn in Zach Edey, 7-4. It's very difficult to stop him. If you let him set up shop around the bucket, you're going to have a big problem. If you double-team him, he has the ability to kick the ball out to the wings. And then you're scrambling defensively. And the Boilermakers are smart enough to move the basketball to the open man, because eventually you move it enough off that double-team of Edey, you're going to have an open shooter. And that's when the opponents have their issues. You try to take away Edey, but you leave the wings open, and the Boilermakers are number 2 in the country in 3-point shooting. And Utah State couldn't stop Edey with 23-14, and they didn't stop the 3-point shot. Purdue hit 47.8% of their threes, going 11 of 23. That is a problem. You have to hope the Boilermakers miss shots from the outside. It's hard to take away both. In fact, you can't, unless Purdue's just cold. If you let Edey go inside, you know the result. If you double him, then Purdue moves the ball to an open man, and they hurt you from the 3-point line. You just got to hope they miss. Boilermakers move on to the Sweet 16, 5th time in 7 years, where they will take on the 5-seed Gonzaga. That game will begin Friday night at 7:39 from Detroit, Michigan. I think you're going to hear a lot of prognosticators saying Gonzaga has a legitimate chance. I'm one of those that don't believe that. I think this sets up well for Purdue. I wouldn't be shocked if the Boilermakers win by double digits to get to the Elite Eight and one step closer to that first Final Four in, what, 44 years? They look good. They look really, really good. The other Big Ten team still alive. The second-place team in the regular season and the Big Ten tournament champions, the Fighting Illini of Illinois. Brad Underwood and the Illini to their first Sweet 16 since the Illinois team that went to the championship game in 2005. It's been a 19-year drought, a rebuilding of the program under Underwood, and now they've punched their ticket to the Sweet 16. They caught a break in the second round. All they had to do was beat the 11 seed Duquesne, which they did handily. They got up early and did not take their foot off the gas, and Illinois beat Duquesne 89-63. Illinois has a fighter's chance to move forward despite having to go through Iowa State and UConn because they have one of the most dynamic players in the country in Terrence Shannon Jr. Outside of Zach Edey, I believe he's the second best player in the country. He's unstoppable in transition. He's added an outside shot to his arsenal. He drives this ship. He had a very quiet day in Champaign against Purdue in that last home game for Illinois, in which they led most of the game, but Purdue pulled it out. He only had 11 in that game. He has been unstoppable, averaging 31 points per game over his last seven contests. This will be a fascinating matchup. The two Iowa State against the three Illinois. Defensive metrics, Iowa State number one in the country in defense, Illinois number one in the country on offense. They will meet Thursday at 10:09 in Boston. Shannon had 30 yesterday, and the dynamic Saluki Marcus Damask had 22. Big Ten only have two left. They've got some work to do to get to the Final Four. Purdue's path is easier. A, they're better, and B, the path is, well, a little more helpful to get to the Final Four. Next up. Next up is the Notre Dame women's basketball team, who got to the Sweet 16 earlier today as they took down Ole Miss by a final score of 71-56. Despite all the injuries, this Irish women's basketball team has made it to the Sweet 16 by seed as a number two seed. They're supposed to get this far. As a two seed, you're supposed to get to the Elite Eight. Still, with that being said, a great accomplishment. Basically a team that has a six-player rotation, but they have the big three, to steal an NBA phrase. Hannah Hidalgo, Sonia Citron, Maddie Westbell. And the big three, a big reason why they're moving on today. Westbell had 20. Hidalgo had 19. Citron the double-double with 17 points and 10 rebounds. So they are off to the Sweet 16, where they will take on the two seed Oregon State later on this week.
Number one.
And our number one storyline of the weekend, this is a unique one. LSU women's basketball coach Kim Mulkey offers a statement ahead of the release of a Washington Post story allegedly about her. Mulkey said this reporter from the Washington Post has been attempting to interview her for the last 2 years. Former players and assistant coaches have been contacted. And apparently this is going to be a scathing background story of Mulkey, who's had great success winning national championships at Baylor and then last year at LSU. Very unique for a personality to come out with a statement before a story even comes out, before we know what's truly in the story. But Mulkey over the weekend took the stage for an NCAA tournament press conference, and she wanted to have her say even before this Washington Post story came out.
Porter has been working on a story about me for 2 years. After 2 years of trying to get me to sit with him for an interview, he contacts LSU on Tuesday as we were getting ready for the first round game of this tournament with more than a dozen questions. demanding a response by Thursday, right before we're scheduled to tip off. Are you kidding me? This was a ridiculous deadline that LSU and I could not possibly meet, and the reporter knew it. It was just an attempt to prevent me from commenting and an attempt to distract us from this tournament. It ain't gonna work, buddy. Unfortunately, this is part of a pattern that goes back years. I told this reporter 2 years ago that I didn't appreciate the hit job he wrote on Brian Kelly, and that's why I wasn't going to do an interview with him. After that, the reporter called two former college coaches of mine and left multiple messages that he was with me in Baton Rouge to get them to call him back, trying to trick these coaches into believing that I was working with the Washington Post on a story. When my former coaches spoke to him and found out that I wasn't talking with a reporter, they were just distraught. And they felt completely misled. Former players have told me that the Washington Post has contacted them and offered to let them be anonymous in a story if they'll say negative things about me. The Washington Post has called former disgruntled players to get negative quotes to include in their story. They're ignoring the 40 plus years of positive stories that people or they have heard from people about me. But you see, reporters who give a megaphone to a one-sided embellished version of things aren't trying to tell the truth. They're trying to sell newspapers and feed the click machine.
She went on to say, that's why we don't trust the media anymore. I just have this thought. If the reporter has been asking for an interview for 2 years, and now she's complaining that 2 days before the tournament starts, he asked for questions to be answered. How is that now turning to make the reporter look like the bad guy? He's given her 2 years to sit down and answer questions about this. And if there are some negative things that are in this story, she would have had a chance to say that's not true or that didn't happen or offer her side of the story. She had 2 years. So I think going down the road of, well, he did this week, 2 weeks or 2 days before the tournament starts, knowing I can't do this, I think you have time to answer 12 questions. You can even do it via email. If it's that important now, where you're saying that you're going to get a lawyer to go after them if they report a false story, so you're going to go to that level of concern to get a lawyer, but you don't take the time in 2 years to try to squash this story or answer those questions. If there was a story about me that was going to come out that I think is going to be bad, I'm taking the time to answer those questions. This just feels like poor, poor, pitiful me. And it's kind of sad because she is a wonderful basketball coach, but she's had plenty of time to squash this story, and she didn't do it. So the reporter gave her one more chance. If you're going to come out with a story, this is the time centered around March Madness. So I don't blame the reporter giving it one more shot. She didn't want to do it. That's her choice. Not his fault. That's her choice. She didn't want to answer or didn't have time. Sorry. You've had plenty of time to handle this situation. Bizarre. Very bizarre. All right. Those are some headlines from the weekend. And oh, by the way, most of us never would have read that story. Now everybody wants to read it after she basically put kerosene on the fire by coming out with this statement even before the story came out. Now, people are going to click on that story like crazy. 6:39 on your home of the Fighting Irish, Sports Radio 960 WSBT.
Hey everyone, Saltgrass Steakhouse is now open in Mishawaka. Wrangle up the crew and head down to Saltgrass Mishawaka for an unforgettable experience. Sink your teeth into mouth-watering, char-grilled, certified Angus beef steaks. Sip on ice-cold craft cocktails. And don't forget to try the famous Spicy Range Rattlers, all made daily in the Scratch Kitchen. Start making delicious memories at Saltgrass Mishawaka, 5126 North Main Street, across from Lazy Boy Furniture Galleries. Dine with us today.